Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, country, and one nation under God. Today is Monday, June 12, 2023, and got a lot of things to talk about. In fact, this week is Flag Day is the 14th on Wednesday. So with that being said, we'll start out with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We'll talk a little bit about that in just a minute, but the other part is it is going to be Flag Day, and we need to honor the flag, not quite like what's happening with our White House. That's another story. But anyway, today we're going to talk about the U.S. Constitution 101, what is an elector? I actually think there's some contradictions. I think we could definitely be challenging a few things in this Constitution. But we will get to that. The other, I guess, a few other quick updates before we really get started. The Trump indictment, which I guess I should say the other part. Before we go there, I love my country. It's my government I'm afraid of. Excuse me, and you will hear why I'm afraid of it as we're talking through things tonight. The Trump indictment is obviously just a fiasco. So disgusting. It's so, if he's broken the law, fine. But you can't have two sets of standards out there, and they're doing anything they can to stop him. And I think, you know, again, the blessing in disguise of Trump has been he put a halt to the total derailment of this country when so many people were totally blind by what they were doing. COVID-19 showed all the impeachments they did of him and all the other nonsense, and the COVID, the corrupt elections of 2020 and all this other stuff. He made people realize, he woke up an awful lot of Americans to say, something isn't right here. And he was totally derailing their new world order and stuff like that. And they can see now people are starting to be aware of it. And all of a sudden, people's attitudes are changing. And, you know, people are waking up, which I did watch that movie, The Great Awakening. And if you haven't watched it, you really need to. G. Edward Griffin, who put it, laid it out in 1969, which I've played on the air in the past and talked about it here in the past. It's just what he was saying that he said in 1969. You just see it all right here. It's just, this was all a plan. There's nothing happening here that's new or unexpected, and people just need to totally understand that. Let's see, tonight, it will be a 9 o'clock night. I will have to have a cutoff at 9 o'clock. I have some other things to tend to this evening, so I won't be able to run over into that after hour like we have been doing the last few weeks. So keep that in mind. And then, see, like I mentioned, the Wednesday is Flag Day. Can you imagine on the White House, they have a rainbow flag, the rainbow flag at the same level as the American flag. It is so disrespectful. It's just disgusting. And it just shows the mentality of these people. They, unrestricted war. They are going to take us down. They don't care. They have no respect for this country. They have no use for it. Nothing. They've tried many other ways. And like I say, Trump really derailed so much of what they did. They were doing. Excuse me. Many of us were aware of it, the Agenda 21 stuff, Agenda 2030. Many of us were aware of what was happening, but many people weren't. The most people said, oh, it's a conspiracy theory, even though it was Eisenhower who warned us of the military-industrial complex years ago. And Ron Paul used to tell people or try to tell them about it, and the Fed. I mean, just all these things have been out there. But people just, oh, that can't happen. Look what they taught me in school. That isn't what they said. And people just bury their head in the sand. And now it's all coming through, and it's really happening. And all of a sudden, yeah, people are finally starting to wake up, finally starting to dismiss crazy news we get, fake news kind of stuff that's out there. So anyway, the thing, you know, with this indictment, it's all just a way. They will do whatever it takes to stop him. And I think it'd be kind of interesting if we have a president working from jail. I don't know how that all happens or what happened there. But we have to just face what it really is. Also, Chick-fil-A, go ahead. I called them again today. Told them that they lost a good customer, in which I was kind of disappointed since it was a new Chick-fil-A in the area. And so that I can't go there because they're no longer a Christian organization. I explained to them that I don't polish anyone's shoes and no one polishes my shoes, and to call me a racist was insulting, and so I guess you just haven't got my business anymore. And a person who in the past went to Chick-fil-A once or twice a week, you know, that's a fair amount, not to mention, you know, buying it for myself for lunch and then also buying for others. So they lost some money there. And I'm disappointed, too, because I actually did like Chick-fil-A, but I can live without them. I can't live without the country. I can live without them. And for all of those who supported Chick-fil-A in the past, when they were being harassed about the abortion stuff and everything else, many of us supported them because they were a Christian company and they should have the right to do these things. But now it's like, you know, they're just all part of the woke, perverted, whatever going on out there. So no more Chick-fil-A for me. Next week we're going to have a special show on the Florida bills. We're going to talk about what's been going on in Florida, and this will give you some insight as to what's really – DeSantis has done a lot of good things, but there's some things you might want to kind of think about and keep in mind. It's not really a report card on DeSantis per se. We will be doing that, but it is things to think about. Okay, here's what happened. Is this what – did you think DeSantis would do this? DeSantis, however you want to pronounce it. And do you really, is that what you want in the White House? Just things to think about. You make your own decision. DeSantis has done so many good things, but I tell you, he's done some things that ain't so good. And when we go through these bills, you'll hear about that next week. Let's see. We had the, the Canadian brush fires. They are trying to say, all these fires all started at the same time, all whatever, all because of climate change. And anybody with a brain isn't going to believe that. And now they're saying, oh, they're going to be burning throughout the whole summer because they just can't do anything about it. They don't know. And it's like, no, you got to remember what Canada really is, too. I mean, Trudeau, he's a communist. He shut down people's bank accounts. That's what they want to do to us with all this crazy central bank digital currency stuff. That's what they're trying to do here. It's disgusting. And this fire stuff, I don't for a minute believe it has anything to do with climate change. I think it has everything to do with putting people in fear and trying to control people and the closing the schools, which actually closing the schools isn't such a bad idea. That part I kind of like, those kind of things. But it's all insane. And you're going to tell me Canada can't control the fires? How did all these fires all start at one time? It's something else going on there. Let's see. I mentioned that this coming Wednesday is Flag Day. And just imagine, I'm sure many of you have probably already seen it, the rainbow flag hanging off of the White House. I'm sorry, that's disgusting. It shouldn't be any other flag. It should be the American flag, nothing else. There shouldn't be any other. And it's a bigger insult when you put that flag at the same level as the American flag. If you were so inclined to put it out there, it should be lower than the American flag. But these are people who have no respect for this country and are trying to destroy it. So what would you expect? And then, excuse me, kind of going back to the Trump indictment. It's like they're worried about all this stuff here because of these documents, which you can go back and see how many other cases. Not that you would, not that it's right to dismiss one because somebody else got away with it or whatever else, but it's been the overall procedure of what they have done when it comes to these documents when a president leaves. But here, Biden did it when he was vice president and senator. He wasn't even allowed to take them. Of course, he didn't have them secured or anything else. And then at the same time, $5 million bribe from Biden and family, and that's okay. It's insane. This is truly unrestricted warfare. They're trying to destroy us. It's going to be their goal to do it. And it's up to us to stop it. It's up to us to demand that these people in public office change their ways. As I said, I love my country. It's my government I'm afraid of. And these people, we have got to get them to start doing their job the way they're supposed to do. And let's see, we saw that, I'm sure somebody saw the I-95 crash. That was really a bizarre thing, too. That was a fuel truck that took out a bridge or an overpass. That's all too weird. How did that happen? I'm still trying to figure that one out. Or what else might have been going on with that as well. And a note to anybody who's out there listening, if I don't know who's in the chat yet right now, no one's in the chat room as of this moment. But the last couple of weeks, I've allowed some people to voice their opinion, and they got a little bit carried away with calling people racist, calling me a racist, and I'm just not going to listen to it, you know? You want to go, you can, if you want to type it up in the chat room, you know, whatever, and then I'll just delete it. But I'm not going to listen. No more than I'm listening to Chick-fil-A tell me that I should go polish people's shoes or something stupid like that. I'm not a racist, and I'm not going to have you call me one, it's just nonsense. So I'm just, if you start with that kind of stuff and you can't have an intelligent conversation, then you'll be cut off, because I want an intelligent discussion here, not that kind of nonsense. And let's see, what was the one other thing? This was a weird, when we talk about all this transgender stuff. An actress, I'm not even sure what her name was, I just heard this. This actress goes out there and all of a sudden decides that she's a man. She doesn't, I guess, do the whole thing, but she has her breast removed. And then she starts acting and living as a man, apparently. And, excuse me, and she, over the weekend is when I first heard this reported, she said she did this because of the voices she heard in her head. You have voices telling you to cut off your breasts. And you think that's normal? And the doctor who did this thought that was normal? It all comes back down to this transgender stuff being a mental illness. It's really what it is. And if we don't start treating it as such, and it's mental illness that's been invoked by the brainwashing that's happening in the public education system and stuff like that. It's very few, or it could possibly very well be with all the vaccines that kids are given that are totally messing up their bodies. So it's between those two things, the autism, which vaccines are causing stuff, and other things that could be being messed up inside the human body. But it's nothing to do with normal. It is not normal to say, I was born this way, but I was born a woman, but I want to be a man. So that's just not normal. And to go ahead and act like it is only shows that we are the ones who have lost our mind to go ahead and go along with it. So please do not support that kind of insanity. And with that being said, I see Cindy out there, and I see Karen, and I see a couple other people. Press the number one if you'd like to speak on the air. I'm going to talk a little bit about this overall discussion, then we'll get some people involved. And now those of you who have been following the show for any length of time, I have the word elector, U.S. Constitution 101. What is an elector? I have a feeling Nathan may call in. I don't know. Just a wild guess. Nathan may call in and share his opinion and his study of the Constitution as well. Nathan and I have had many discussions. We've talked about the Electoral College. And the word college is not in the Constitution, so that's not part of the discussion tonight. The word college is a collection, a group of people put together for some common purpose, whatever you want to call it. But the electors is the key. And I found it really interesting, as I was actually having a discussion with Nathan at some point on some of this. I said, I'm going to go take a look at every place I see the word elector in the Constitution and how it's used and what it means. Some things are repetitive. Some things, to me, seem to contradict each other. And then I looked a little bit in the Florida state statutes on the electoral process, electors, the selection process. And if we have time, we'll get there. But the whole point is, what is an elector? Who selects them? Are our rights being violated? What does the Constitution really say? Are there contradictions in the Constitution? And, excuse me, as it really is working today, which to me, there's definitely contradictions in the Constitution, and I think there could be challenges to it, and there should be challenges to it. But as I see it today, if everything I was reading up, the states are going out there, depending on whoever is in public office, if it happens to be a Republican governor and a Republican legislature, you're going to have a group of Republican electors. If it's a Democrat, then it's going to be the Democrats or whoever. Because it's the states who are currently selecting these electors. We don't have a say in it. We have no true voice in who these electors are. And that's part of what the dispute will be, that maybe we're supposed to, as in the 24th Amendment. Excuse me. But the whole point is these people do this. And I've got some different links out there. I could not fit everything onto the show page this time. But you can go out there and do a search, and you'll find who the electors are, for who they were for 2020 and that kind of stuff. Because the electors are strictly for the purpose of president and vice president. Technically, they're supposed to be two separate votes. But we know that doesn't happen today anymore. Trump will run with Pence or whoever, somebody different this time, I'm sure, as their vice president. And they run as a team. But technically, it's two separate votes, okay, for the Constitution. And so the way they do it, because the state is appointing the electors based on who they want to be in there, truthfully, if we're totally, totally honest with ourselves, the people don't vote. The people do not select the president or the vice president. And in the past, that was actually true with the Senate. The U.S. Senate was at one point selected by the state legislatures. And the Amendment 17, I think it was, that changed that. And changed it where it was now a popular vote. Okay, and some will say that was good and some will say it was bad. I don't know. I have mixed feelings on it. But the whole point is it was the state legislature. So you elected your state representatives and state senators and stuff, and then they were the ones who selected your U.S. senators. Okay, and now we have the electors who are the ones who actually go and cast the vote for the president and vice president. And right now, I mean, based on the fact that we have DeSantis who's in there, and one of the things I read, DeSantis, the list of the 29 electors that we have, this is the Electoral College electors, have all pledged to vote for Trump or whoever the Republican candidate, or who the party is, whatever. So, truthfully, if you're going to vote in the presidential, it really doesn't mean anything. Now, some people are going to get upset that I said that, but if you look into the Constitution, doesn't mean anything. Now, when it comes to the 24th Amendment, the primaries, we're supposed to have a primary. Everybody's supposed to participate, and that doesn't happen either. So we have a lot of problems here if we take a deep dive into what the Constitution says about the electors and the contradictions that we have in there. So I'm going to go through this. I'm going to get a couple people on the line here. Again, press 1 if you want to speak on the air. And I'm going to start with Article 1, Section 2. The House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen by every second year by the people of the several states, and the electors in each state shall have qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislature. Now, right there, to me, I read that to say a representative is an elector. That's the way they sort of define representative there, elector. So just keep that in mind as we go through other places that refers to representatives. So we'll put that out there too, the, what an elector is versus what a representative is. Again, it causes the confusion here. And then you go down Article 2, Section 1, each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress, but no senator or representative or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed an elector. Now, that's the elector that is going to cast the vote for the president and vice president, okay? The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for two persons to whom at least one shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. That part was always kind of strange to me. Okay, the Congress may determine the time of choosing of the electors and the day. Now, there's a little bit more to that, but, again, I didn't have room to put everything in here. And I can flip over to the Constitution. But the point is, it's Congress that determines when they will select the choosing of these electors. And then you go back to that, how the states will do this. The states will select these electors. And I'm going to jump down here for some of the parts here that are what I see are the most conflicting, but we can go out there. The 23rd Amendment, a number of electors of president, vice president, equal to a whole number of senators representing the same thing we heard before. 17th Amendment, the electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors. We've heard that once before. The 24th Amendment, this is the one that gets Nathan going, and he'll probably call in to help elaborate on this one. The right of the right of citizens of the United States to vote in any primary or other election for president or vice president, for electors for president or vice president, or for senator or representative in Congress shall not be denied or abridged by the United States of any state by reason of failure to pay poll tax or other tax. That right there is where you have the biggest contradiction. I think there's a couple other ones along the way there. But right there, we are not given, if you are a no-party affiliate or a third party, you're not, the third parties really don't participate in the primaries. It's a moot point. But the whole point is you are denied the right to vote for the electors. That's the key, the electors. The right of citizens of the United States to vote in any primary or other election for president or vice president, for electors for president and vice president. Because the fact of the matter is voting for them in the primary, to a certain degree, almost doesn't mean anything. When it comes to this, because it's the elector who's going to vote for the president. So to that degree, the primary doesn't even mean anything. If you've got a group of Republicans out there who have selected a group of Republican electors and they've decided who they want, that's who they're going to vote for. It's squirrely the way it is. Now, of course, you say the primary – whoever wins that primary is who's going to go. That's who the party is going to sponsor to go on to it. But the truth is it could be somebody else. They could have multiple Republicans on one ballot. But ultimately it's going to be the electors who actually select or elect the president and the vice president. And in the past, I knew that they did that, but I didn't see quite the big gap in who elects the electors. It's not us. And it looks to me like we're supposed to have that right. So with that being said, and again, I can flip over to the Constitution and read some of the stuff in a little bit more detail that as we need to, like the 12th Amendment and the 14th Amendment. Definitely want to read some of the stuff off of those. But the whole point is we have a contradiction as to who is supposed to select the electors. So are we the people supposed to select the electors who will represent us in voting for the president and vice president, or is it the state who's supposed to do it? Because to me, I think it's telling us both. Well, that being said, I see Karen out here, and I also see Cindy. So I will open up Karen and Cindy. Karen, what are you thinking? And then we'll go to Cindy.
Okay, to my knowledge, from what I remember, and I have not done research, the electors are chosen by the representatives. The House of Representatives represents the people. So you're supposed to elect your representative, and your representative is supposed to work for you. The problem when the Constitution was written, 30,000 people were in a district for one representative. Well, now we have 300,000. And, of course, we know the power struggle. We know all of the other stuff. But other thing that was changed, which was wrong, and the Senate, okay, so the House of Representatives represents the people. That's why it's called the People's House. The Senate is supposed to represent the state. And that's why the representatives who represent the people were supposed to vote for two senators to go to D.C. and represent the state. Now what happened when they changed it is that the senators represent anything. They're not beholden really to anybody anymore. There's no district you're in that chooses your senator, that gets together and has a conference and picks the senator. And then you're supposed to interact with your constituents and make sure that everybody's on the same page. That was why the popular vote became important as the population grew, because that was an indicator of what the populace wanted. Unfortunately, now it's an indicator of how much the Democrat Marxists can cheat. And there's nothing really anymore that even resembles what the founders had set up, and most of it is population and logistics. But from what I heard, all of what we're talking about is not going to make a bit of difference anymore, because once they get AI in place, artificial intelligence, they can manipulate anything, including the voting machines. So we're going to be in a world of hurt once that happens. And this is part of the problem, is that the people don't know. Just like everything else, is a well-kept secret. I believe the people who are running for office as right now, they have one job, and that's to disparage Trump. That's all that their job is to do anything derogatory that they can say, because they're running against him, so they will be given a pass for what they say. And this should be an indication to us. One just had to look at the crowds in North Carolina and Georgia. You know, nobody went to see Trump, really. I don't think so. The place was filled, and then some. The overflow was more than Biden gets at one of his speeches. And this, what we have to recognize is that these people really, truly, 100%, without a shadow of a doubt, are criminals. They're gangsters.
Yeah.
And this is what gangsters do. So knowing full well what gangsters do, we have to stop letting them do it, you would think. And that's why the more knowledge we have, the harder it's going to be for them to do what they're doing. This Trump horrific, whatever we want to call it, indictment, is a diversion because of the emails that were found on the Hunter Biden laptop, of which, what was it, I think 10,000 photos and emails were put on a website called BidenLaptopMedia.com, and you can find everything there.
Yeah.
The group Marco Polo, which is a research firm, has been researching this for the last year and a half, and they have put all the documents on the website. And this is what we have to do with the J6 also, because they're going to next go after Trump for arranging a J6 insurrection. And you have to also be careful at the words that they use. Why would they use insurrection? Because insurrection is in the Constitution. Why? It isn't.
Yep.
So we have to do the same thing they're doing and call things just like them. Who cares if it's not an insurrection? To us, it's an insurrection. That's the way I feel today.
The $5 million to the Biden family that has been identified just recently, how is that not treason?
Right.
How are the documents with the classified or unclassified documents with Trump anywhere near? Yet it's okay to go and enter and be bribed by the CCP. It's so insane. So insane. But at the same time, you know, how are we going to elect these people? Who's going to get elected next time, and why? And this process, we do have problems with the electoral process here. There's no two ways about it when it comes to the electors. Now, when technically with the other ones, they were going out there and it's the majority vote. When it comes to all the other offices, in theory, that's what we're being told. Of course, that doesn't allow for the corrupt machines. But when it comes to the president, who's really going to elect the president? And what's going to happen at these different state levels of how they put these electors out there? And are we not being denied our right to select these electors?
Well, this is why people have been saying that it is time for the Supreme Court to interpret the Constitution and set it up, and everybody would, unfortunately, whatever they say, that is, we have to accept one thing. We can't say the Constitution is bedrock of our country and it's a living, breathing document. No, wait a minute. It can't be. It's not. It's either or. So that's really what we should be doing. And then using the same words and the same terminology that they do. And that's like I always say, if you want to beat them, we have to take their programs, copy them, and just change the outcome and make it an outcome that we want, not one that they want. And as you were talking, I was thinking, okay, so what do? We don't ask why questions. If you said somebody calls you a racist, you know, this is what you would do. Somebody calls me a racist, I would say, can you give me an example?
Yeah.
There's no example. Yeah. Okay, then what is a racist? You can't give me an example. Why are you calling me this? They have nothing to say. They'll start yelling, but that's okay because it's going to annoy them enough that some of them will actually question, and that is the worst thing that you can do in a Marxist society because everybody has to think the same. And the other problem that we have, I believe, is that school stifles creativity.
Oh,
and
yeah.
People are inherently curious, and they want to get something, and they want to play with it when they're kids, and they want to make it better. So they take things apart, and then they put them together again, and they do all of these things that enhance their curiosity. And the school is supposed to give them the skills to be able to do that so that their curiosity will turn into something successful. Marxism stifles curiosity. Because
yep.
Everybody has to think the same. Everybody has to do the same. Everybody has to be the same. So that feeling doesn't go away. But you have no outlet for it. So you act out. Or you do something dumb. Or blah, blah, blah. And then your school says to your parents, oh, this child is a problem. They have a mental problem. We have to prescribe you these drugs if you want your child to be in school. And this is the problem. So what happens, these kids are taught that only an outside stimulus can fix their problem instead of saying, okay, what can I do to fix my problem? They don't have that. They have to have an outside stimulus to fix the problem. And this way you can manipulate that because you can control the outside stimulus. So we will have vending machines in New York City that disperse crack pipes and needles with messages that says, don't share your drugs. This is what is going on. How do we expect this society to create anything when they're stoned half the time, three quarters of the time, or maybe all the time? And that's because they have no hope. They have no future. Everything is laid out in front of them. If you, in a Marxist society, if you're a ditch digger and your father was a ditch, if your father was a ditch digger, you're a ditch digger. And it doesn't matter what you want to be, you're going to be a ditch digger, period, because that's what the state needs. Or they might say, sorry, we don't need any more ditch diggers today. We're all filled up, so you'll have to clean toilet bowls. Something.
Yeah. Well,
but you're
but
looking
I mean,
at the state.
This is the ultimate indoctrination, the brainwashing, and this is where the go out there to limit critical thinking. You're, as we've said many times before, they're training you. They're not educating you. Educating you teaches you how to figure things out and think and critical thinking and ask questions. That's totally stifled in the current environment. And that's why I recently put something out there saying we need to shut down all public education, and that includes funding of any college. We need to totally, totally eliminate that part. Because, again, back to the elections and the Constitution, we know they don't teach them this. And had we been really teaching the Constitution, maybe we would have talked more about what's going on with these electors and that type of thing. And I see Cindy out there. I want to go ahead and let her chime in a little bit on the electors, and I see Joe, I will get to him too. But it's all very part of the same thing. It's all a process. Every bit of this is a process. But I tell you, just after the conversation I've had recently, well, I mean, many conversations with Nathan on the electors, which I haven't seen him out there yet. I'm sure he's going to chime in before the night is over. We have a lot of everything happening to our elections. Let's talk about how we really elect people. And then on that one, too, let's see, before I go directly to Cindy, for those who want to know, for Florida, it's chat in the Florida Constitution, Chapter 103, electors of the president, vice president, electors, president, vice president, known as presidential electors, not called the Electoral College, called presidential electors, shall be elected on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in the November of the year, the number of which is multiplied by 4, votes cast for the actual candidates for president. I mean, this stuff, you can tell lawyers, too many lawyers were involved in writing this stuff up. But the whole point is the nomination of presidential electors. It goes through and explains the governor shall nominate the presidential electors for each political party. It goes through all this stuff here. And we, the people, are not engaged in any of this part of these electors, which I go back to that 24th Amendment. Are we supposed to be the ones who vote in at least a primary for the electors? That is, who is really electing the next president? How much say do we truly have in it? Either through the primary process, which all the NPAs are excluded from, or through the process of the electors, because the electors are ultimately the one who's going to elect the president, not the people. Should the electors have to vote the same as what the area, the constituents that they're supposed to be representing, should they have to vote what those people wanted? Or because they're elected by, appointed by the state, that they've made a pledge. They're not pledging to the country. They're pledging to a party, which goes back into the total unconstitutionality to me of the role of private entities as the RNC and DNC play in these elections. Who really owns the election? The RNC and the DNC? We don't really have much say in it. I didn't mean to change subject, but I want to kind of make sure we clear this one up, but it's all related. It all ties one thing to another. It's all part of the corruption of what is happening. Cindy, are you still there? And you might be on mute. I can go, and I see Joe out there. I can get Joe to chime in here. Cindy, did you want to add anything to that discussion, or are you going to wait a minute? Okay. Let's go ahead and get Joe in here. Joe, are you there?
Hello, Sally. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine.
Did you read over that particular essay that I had written about God and that Lori sent to you?
To be honest, no, I have not. To be honest, I don't remember getting it. I'll have to double check to make sure it didn't land on a spam folder or something, because I do not recall receiving it.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting. I answered all the rebuttals that, the people have about the existence of God. So it's a nice, lengthy little essay. It's a hypothetical conversation between me and a Christian. So, it'd be interesting reading. But getting to your conversation about electors, that's a good question. Should the electors be held to what the constituents want, or should they be held to what their party wants? I'd like somebody to chime in on that who actually has done some research about that. Personally, I don't know yet.
The electors are chosen by the House of Representatives, and in Florida, it's a winner-take-all state. So what happens is they count how many representatives we have. That's why population is so important. And watch California. They're going to try to get all of these illegals added in to their population. Anyway, you have, let's say in Florida, I don't remember how many how many representatives we have. But let's, for argument's sake, say there are between the House and the Senate, there's 300. In the federal election, let's say due to population, I think it's 25 or 6 plus 2. So let's say it's 26 plus 2 is 28. So we would have 28 electors. Now, because Florida is a winner-take-all state, who the people chose to be the president from the state of Florida is where the electors must vote. Now, other states, they don't have to do that. So you have to check your supervisor of elections, and that is what you should. I know there was a big movement to not do that because they said it wasn't fair, but when you think about it, it is fair because the electors are voting what the people of that state voted for. That's all they're doing is carrying the message. So we really need, I would think, the Supreme Court to lay out exactly how all of this applies to today and what should be done about it. And there should be a revamping of our voting and procedures because so much of it has changed.
Yeah, and it's actually because of last year, the last election, we got one more elector, whatever, it's 29. I did validate that part. So a total of 29 altogether for Florida because we got one from California because everybody was moving out of California.
Oh, that's right. And that's true. Yeah. Went up in population. Yeah, you're correct.
And on the one page that I read today where it was listing all the electors by the state, it actually made the statement that the electors pledged to vote for Trump, and that's maybe that was from the 2020 election when they were, because that would have been the last one presidential, but they pledged to vote for Trump. So I don't, that's pledging is what concerns me because of the political parties. I don't like that word pledge.
Oh well, that's something I guess.
But I mean, but that was what's confusing me. If it is
They were using, well, I don't know. But
look, if you have the people who pledge and they're going to vote exactly as the constituents want, then you don't need electors. Because if the people who are elected are going to represent exactly the population that they represent, then why do you need them? You just have the popular vote and take it like that.
Because this is not a democracy. We are a representative republic. Now, if we want to change and become a democracy, that's different. But right now, we have people who represent us, and that's probably because the communication time was so bad that people couldn't leave their job, their farm, their whatever, to go to whomever, wherever, to go and vote. So they would pick the person in the town to go and represent them. And that's how this representative started. And also, you don't really want just a popular election because we saw at the last election how much they cheat. And it's harder, but it's not impossible to cheat with representatives. It is much easier to do it when you have majority rule. I mean, I go back to Hitler was elected by a majority population. What's going to happen, though, if you know Marxism, what will happen is that eventually all of the elected positions will be eliminated. Because in a Marxist society, the positions are filled by appointed, favored people who donate, people who are party animals and just believe in the party, Hitler's inner circle, that kind of thing. So those positions will be filled as favors rather than being voted upon by the people. So all of these wonderful morons who are in Congress right now don't realize that they're voting to get rid of their own jobs in their own position. And so I find that very interesting.
What's the criteria for electing an elector?
The correct, well, what?
What's the criteria for getting an elector?
Well, that's part of the discussion right here, where the one part of the one amendment makes reference to the states shall, in such a manner, appoint the electors and their legislature, whatever. So the one part is giving the control to the state on how they're going to select these electors. But in the 24th Amendment, it says we have the right in the primaries, but we cannot be denied the right to vote for the electors, and that's in the primary. So that's where I'm saying, to me, there's a contradiction of how we're selecting these electors. And then the states, but not all the state rules are the same. That's kind of what Karen was saying. In Florida, it's a winner take all. So if a majority out of all the districts, whatever, in Florida, say three of them actually voted for Biden and then the rest of them voted for Trump, because it's a winner take all, they would all go for Trump. So the ones that were technically for Biden wouldn't go there. They would be all winner take all. However, in some of the other states, I know that there's some place out there, I can't remember which one, where the electors actually have a choice to switch their vote. And I, in the past, I can sort of understand why that might have been allowed, as the logic I was taking. Okay, you've got 10 people out there running for president, and in your one town or one district, whatever, everybody voted for the ninth person on the list, whatever, one of the lower people who was never going to have enough of the overall electoral votes based on the election. So do you have that elector continue to vote for that person who has no chance because you've already seen what all the others are looking like, you don't really stand the chance? Do you give them the flexibility to say, well, between Biden and Trump, who would I rather have, because my person down here on the list doesn't stand a chance, they're too far down, and they're not even on the ballot in 20 of the other states? So are you going to go and hold them accountable to vote for that person, or do you give them the flexibility to say you're going to vote for Biden or Trump, you know, that type of thing? That was, to me, the original intent. Is that possibly they would have a better option? It's really narrowed down to these two people. I can vote for this person, but or would you rather I?
But that would be an opinion of who's the better option. If, for example, using your example, the elector is
who most aligns to what you're
voting for number 10. Then 10. You can't say, well, 10 doesn't seem like he has a chance, so I'm going to cast my vote to either number 1 or number 2. Number 10 doesn't have a chance. Tough luck. You're not going
to
win.
But back to the fact that the elector was a representative for you to vote is kind of what Karen was saying. But go ahead, Karen.
If the candidate says, I release my electors, and my choice is ABC, then the electors would be able to vote for ABC. And again, that depends on the state, because I believe it's Colorado that does a split. If 12 people, two-thirds of the party votes for Trump and one-third votes for Biden, then two-thirds of the electors would go to Trump and one-third would go to Biden. That's a different state, and I believe that's like, I want to say Oregon, but I'm not sure. It's Oregon or Washington. And the state of Washington does not only has vote by mail. They don't have anything else. So unless you know what each state is doing, it's hard to make a blanket decision, and that's why I would think that the Supreme Court should say, this is the way we are interpreting the Constitution, and that's what we follow. Many things that are, you're right, there are so many things that you can put a question mark by. Think about the natural-born citizen to be a president. That's another one. That's such a gray area. Who is a natural-born citizen? It's supposed to be the mother and father are both citizens of America when the child is born. And the child is naturally born, and the parents have allegiance to America. That was their big deal. That's why they did that. They wanted both parents to have allegiance to America, and then the child would have allegiance to America. Little did they know.
Okay, and here, the 12th Amendment. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for the president and vice president, one of whom at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. They shall, which I find that interesting too, shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. They shall name in their ballots the person voted for as president, and in a distinct ballot the person voted as vice president. Do we truly think we have two separate elections? Because in the past there was a Republican and a Democrat elected at one time, but you don't see that anymore. And they shall make distinct lists of all persons voted for as president and of all persons voted for as vice president, and the number of votes for each, which list they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of the government of the United States directed to the president of the Senate. Now, that's hard to read. It really is.
Once you get used to it, you learn how to do it. The thing is that I understand the theory behind the Electoral College.
Let me finish this one. So the word college isn't in there. The president of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open the certificates, and votes shall be then counted. The persons having the greatest number of votes shall be the president. If such number be a majority, the number of electors appointed, and if no person have such majority, then from the persons having the highest number, not exceeding three on the list of those voted for as president, the House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president, which I think that's all pretty interesting, too. By choosing the president, I'm going to jump down just a hair. The person having the greatest number of votes as vice president shall become vice president if such number majority. A whole number of electors appointed, and no person have a majority, then from the two highest numbers on the list, the Senate shall choose the vice president. So, I mean, it's definitely not what you'd call as clean and as simple as we sometimes think it is. Well, anyway, so that's the 12th. I'm sorry. Go ahead and say what you're going to say, Joe.
Well, it's not simple, but I understand the theory behind it. For example, when this was instituted back in the 1800s, 1700s, then let's say you had a state as large as Texas, and you had one state the size of Vermont and the other state the size of Rhode Island. Now, if you were going to have nothing but the popular vote, then anybody who represented Texas or came from Texas would always be the president, because you could have half the people in Texas voting for the president, let's say even 45%, and you can have 90% of the other residents in Vermont and Rhode Island voting for the other guy, and it doesn't matter because Texas is such a large state, it takes up all of the majority of the combined union. So I understand the theory behind the Electoral College, but it is kind of complicated, and I haven't read that, and I haven't followed it, so I'd like to know how. And which I'm sure that you're reading, and that's the criteria about how to get these electors elected, and how effectively are they performing the duty of representing the will of the people? Because even though we're not going to have a direct democracy, we still have to abide by, some portion of the people that do want a certain president and a certain vice president to be elected. We can't just dismiss them out of hand.
Yeah, and I think real quick comment here. Seems to me once or twice the actual president elected was actually not the majority vote. The majority of times it ends up being the same. They end up being in sync, so they say. But there have been times when it wasn't, so they said. Go ahead, Karen.
Oh, I was just going to ask Joe what state he's from, Joe.
Well, when they call me Joe from Montana, you can guess.
Okay, that's what I mean. But you have to look up on your supervisor of elections to see how electors are handled in your state. I'm not familiar with the Montana law. You might have a split electors, where, you know, whatever percentage it goes to the winner and whatever percentage goes to the loser. That's, some states have that. Some states have a winner-take-all. Some states, the elector can go and change their mind. And then that depends on, can they change their mind because their constituents tell them to change their mind? Or can they, are they changing their mind because the candidate they were supporting told them to change their mind? So it really depends upon each state and the individuality. So there's really no answer, because technically the feds are not supposed to be involved in elections. It's supposed to be run by the state, not the federal government. So it makes it harder to know unless you know what your state is doing.
Yep, and Cindy, I still see you out there. If you're able to join in, let us know. I know you know Florida law pretty good. I know last time Cindy was having problems with her phone as well. So, okay. Well, Cindy, you may want to hang up and call back in if you want to try to chime in on some of this. I'm not hearing you if you're speaking and whatever, but we have had problems with your connection in the past. But, yeah, anyway, in Florida law, there's quite a bit to it, and I probably should have studied a little bit more of the Florida law piece of it. But I did pull it up, and if you look out there again, anybody that looks at the Florida State Constitution, it's Chapter 103, nomination for write-in candidates, Congress of the dates, we know that, meeting of electors, filling in plurality of the votes to fill vacancies, compensation, yes, we cover their travel expenses, use of party name, political advertising, political parties, affiliated party committees, minor party political parties, presidential preference primary, powers and duties of executive committees, political parties also deemed vacant in certain cases, removal of county executive committee member for violation of oath. And so I think there's a lot more in here, and especially when it ties into those committees. Now, again, Karen, I'm not sure how you're probably more well-versed on Florida law and the electoral, the committees, as to how they were doing this, but there's actually quite a bit out here, and I know I'm not going to cover it. Yeah, go ahead.
They've made so many changes, I really should go back and review it again, because when I decided to be a poll worker because I thought it would be a good idea so I could understand all of this. And they made so many changes from the time before, so I'm not sure. So I don't want to say anything. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, I'm telling you, it would take several shows to cover everything here that they have in the Florida Constitution. It's like, in the event no county committee man or committee woman is elected when a vacancy occurs from any other cause, from any county executive committee, the county chair shall call a meeting of the county executive committee by due notice of all members, and the vacancy shall be filled in by a majority of vote of those present at a meeting at which a quorum is present. Such vacancy shall be filled by a qualified member of the political party residing in the district where the vacancy occurred and for the unexpired portion of the term. That's an example. That's why they had the 13th Amendment. They did not want lawyers in public office. Okay, let's see. It keeps going back to these each state executive committee. Now, when I'm thinking executive committee, I'm thinking like the Republican executive committee, the Democrat executive committee, the Libertarian executive committee. So these are the people that are really doing this. So if you're a no-party affiliate, you're just SOL.
Right.
You're truly not part of the problem.
They're defying the state legislatures. That was part of the problem when they had the when they were talking about mail-in ballots. Remember all the controversy about, wait a minute, you, the committees, and you, the appointed agencies, are legalizing these mail-in ballots, but the state legislatures did not approve of this. Now, this was something that who was it that was going around from state to state talking about this? I forget. But nobody was listening to him, and he was showing proof that the election was rigged, and that the state legislatures didn't have any kind of approval or hand in the mail-in ballots, and the other ballots. I forgot the name for it, but you know, everything's going to be written in legalese. Lawyers don't want the people to understand what they're talking about.
Exactly. And that's why there was a 13th Amendment to ban them. The Lost Amendment. Okay, let's see here. Okay. In addition to the members provided for the subsection 1, each county executive committee shall include all members of the legislature who are residents of the county and the members of their respective political party who shall be known as at-large committeemen and committeewomen. Now, I'm sure when all this was written, it didn't say committee men and committee women. But anyway, each state executive committee shall include as at-large committee men and committee women all members of the United States Congress representing the state of Florida who are members of the political party, all statewide elected officials who are members of the party, 10 Florida registered voters who are members of the party. I mean, this is the kind of stuff it goes through.
Right.
So yeah. it you really have to dissect this stuff and say, wait a minute, but ultimately, it's the political parties that have total control, and for the two parties, obviously, have the most control. So the 50% of NPAs, we don't count. We're not part of the process.
No.
And that's totally not right when you go and look at that 24th Amendment. At a minimum, we should have the right to vote in the primary. We should have the right to vote in the general. But right now, we are truly excluded, and I don't see how you should have to be part of a political party to be a voter. But that's what it is. And it's not right. I don't see how it's constitutional.
No, you're absolutely right, and it's not. And the bad news is that unless we get enough members to join the political parties, the only way to break them up is to do what the Democrats do. You have to infiltrate, and then you can break it up. And that's why there is a big push for people to join their precinct, even if you have to go there holding your nose, because if you get enough good guys in your precinct, then you can change the rules, which is what all of this is about.
And hell will freeze over someday.
Yeah, well, that's the only way to change it. Otherwise, it's not going to change. We have to vet the candidates, but they lie. They even lie when we're vetting them. How many Democrats run as Republicans, and how many Republicans? Well, they don't do it as much as the Democrats, but they do. They change parties in order to get elected. It's all about what is the goal. What's the goal?
It's all political scheme.
But wait a minute. It's all about... what is the goal? What is the goal that you are trying to achieve? And the goal of the Democrat Party
control.
Is to win, period.
Well,
and they don't care how they do it. That's it.
It's the goal of both parties.
Okay. We have,
both parties.
Hold on. We have another. Hold on. We'll continue that on in just a minute because I got something to say on that one too. But we do have another caller. 5283, can we get your first name, please?
Will Sarge do?
Oh.
Maybe.
Yep.
Maybe.
Sarge will do, yes. Hello, Sarge.
Okay. Hey, how you doing, Sally? This is a great, great discussion on the mechanics of the Electoral College because so many people are utterly ignorant of it, and you're doing a superb job of covering most of the bases. What I would like to do is introduce some real-life, real-world historical examples of how the electoral process can be seen to go awry and what happens in an attempt to resolve them. Many of these contradictions that you're discussing here actually came up in real-life historical examples. And the three I'm speaking of are the Hilden Hayes election of 1876, the leading to the Tilden-Hayes Compromise. I don't know if you're familiar. You probably are, but that's one. The other is the alternative slate of electors that the Democrats put forth in the Richard Nixon, John F. Kennedy election regarding the state of Hawaii and their electoral votes. And by the way, nobody accused them of trying to steal an election when they did it. And they successfully overturned the initial vote that went to Richard Nixon. And finally, what happened on January 6th that people are overlooking with regard to the Electoral Count Act of 1876, 1877, and how, which, of course, came out of the Rutherford Hayes fiasco. And all of those things, I think, have direct bearing on what you're, not only what you're talking about, but on these accusations that are being leveled against Donald Trump.
Well, yeah, everything to do with Jan 6, it was, it's just another attack on the people. It's the attack, we know, I mean, if you were watching online that night, you saw the numbers change. You could never, there could be a point when somebody's being, when people are casting votes, there could be a point in time when you don't get any new votes, but your vote should never go down. And that's what happened. Trump had, I don't know, 500,000 votes, whatever it was, and then the next minute he has less than 500,000 votes. You never lose the votes. You might not get more votes, but you shouldn't lose them. And we saw the numbers literally flip online. And nobody wants to call that into account for, wait a minute, something, this is where the machines, this was during the machine crisis or whatever was going on. And it's like, it would be one thing if you said he didn't get any more votes after that. But how can you say he lost votes? That doesn't make sense.
But here's the thing, well, sorry, this is even, but this is something that's even more significant than that if you stop to think about it. Now, think about it for a minute. They're complaining that Donald Trump led an insurrection to stop the electoral vote count. Now, think about it. What they were doing was, we had 147 members of the House and the Senate before January 6th, publicly expressed the intent to challenge the electoral vote. They publicly, 147, they were all Republicans, but they were members of the House and the Senate, and they are entitled to do so under the Electoral Count Act. They are allowed to voice their objection. That would require the measure to be tabled and put up for a vote on the Senate as to whether or not to suspend the count. I would submit to you that given the evidence of the federal government instigators that were planted throughout the demonstration, are you listening in, Ray Epps? It is far more likely that FedGov agitators promulgated a Fed correction than it is that Trump would instigate something that would mitigate the likelihood of a meaningful challenge to the 2020 electoral count. Remember, there are people saying they were going to object to it. It was suspended under the emergency procedures of the House when the riot started. Those meant that, and when they reconvened that evening, the only measure, since Nancy Pelosi was able to invoke the emergency rule, the only thing they were allowed to consider was the certification itself and nothing else. Objections were not allowed. Yeah, and that's something that almost nobody seems to want to talk about. When they reconvened, because remember, the objections, it didn't matter that much that they would not have changed or suspended the vote. It would have created a constitutional challenge that could be heard by SCOTUS had they done that. The objections could have been submitted to SCOTUS for a challenge to the vote, to the election itself. But by this, Nancy Pelosi circumvented that and used the riot exactly for that purpose.
That's why they created it. That's why they did it. They instigated it. They knew.
Correct.
They didn't want Trump to challenge anything. They hated the fact that 140 whatever signed a letter and were going to actually say something on the floor. That was horrifying to them, and the majority of them are part of it also. They didn't want things to change. They don't want people to be in charge and have a say. This has nothing to do with that. This is what they planned.
Yeah, because they had two motions. They had two motions. They had one senator out of the 147, one member of the House, one member of the Senate, were prepared to offer their objections. And, of course, these motions were more completely legal and constitutional under both the Constitution and the Electoral Count Act of 1877. Then those procedures would have required the House to pause the certification and then vote to determine whether the motion to suspend the certification could move forward. So they had to have a way to remove that process and then continue to certify this election with no detractors on the record. And that's what was able to do when they reconvened under the emergency House rule.
Yep. Yeah, that exactly. And then how many of the Republicans who were out there ready to challenge it who caved at that point? That was
almost all of them decided to not make a fuss about it anymore. Because
that's the cowardness of
alleged insurrection.
This is what you're electing. These are the people that you're electing to serve and protect. They're a bunch of cowards. No different than the GOP and the debt ceiling and everything else. So
yeah,
this is why it's like, okay, you've got a bunch of Marxists over here trying to doing everything they can to totally take down the country and make it a communist country, and they seem to be united in that determination. Then we've got a bunch of idiots for Republicans who don't do anything else. I mean, you're the one that's supposed to support you is too weak to do anything.
It's not about cowardice. About they are of the same uniparty. Their goal is the same as the communists. It's not about cowardice. Yes.
I won't argue that point. It's a uniparty. I've said it many times before. The Democrats ran as Republicans. They said, okay, the only way we have to take over this country, and the only we're going to do this by infiltrating on the party. So we start allowing communists to run for public office. We say that's okay.
Thank you, Bill Clinton.
The Democrats being smarter than I'll give it to you in just a second, Karen. I'll just finish this real quick. So the Democrats were smart enough to run as Republicans. Republicans were not smart enough to run as Democrats. So little by little, the Democrat Party, the uniparty, has taken over the Republican Party. Yes, Karen.
No, I was just going to say thank you, Bill Clinton, because we used to have a law that said that the communists and their derivatives cannot run for any office. They cannot be part of government. And Bill Clinton, and I don't remember the executive order, but I can find it, did one of his parting gifts along with canceling the Glass-Steagall Act and giving our technology to China was to eliminate
in other words, to allow communists. I don't. Where are communists elected?
Where are they elected?
The communists at state level, and there's certainly members of the Communist Party of the United States of America have been elected.
Yes, we have 87 of them in our Congress, and Bernie Sanders is a perfect example. Bernie is a crowd. AOC is a communist. They're all part of, as you said, communist.
Bernie Sanders was a member of the United States of America once upon a time.
Yes. Well, nothing has changed.
But here's the thing about what's going on in Georgia. Now, remember, they're trying to say that Donald Trump tried to influence the election, and they put up a slate of fake electors, and that's more nonsense because they weren't fake electors. They were contingent Republican electors named consistent with legal precedent to preserve the still ongoing legal challenges to Georgia's certified vote. It's almost identical to what happened in 1960 in Hawaii in a Nixon-Kennedy race. I mean, this is what it gets me about people don't know that on January 6, 1961, Hawaii had originally certified Richard Nixon the victor in that election. And what happened was that Kennedy did have enough electoral votes to win the White House. Okay, he did have that many by December 9th. But the Hawaii's votes were still in question. And, okay, the presidency didn't depend on these three votes from Hawaii, but the Democrats still challenged the initial returns. They gave Nixon 141 vote edge or, a slight margin of victory. Now, based on the original count that was in favor of Nixon, the acting governor of Hawaii, a Republican named James Kealoha, certified the Republican electors on November 28, 1960. On December 13th, over the objections of the Hawaii State Attorney General, a circuit court judge there ordered a recount. Then on December 19th, both Nixon and Kennedy electors met, cast their votes for president and vice president, and certified their own meeting in both. Now, when they cast the votes for Kennedy, the three Hawaiian Democrats certified that they were the duly and legally qualified and appointed electors for president and vice president of the state of Hawaii, and that they had been certified as such by the executive of the state. They further went on to say, we hereby certify that the list of all the votes of the state of Hawaii given for president and of all the votes given for vice president are contained herein. Two of these three Democrats were retired federal judges. They personally mailed the Democrat electoral votes to Congress on December 20th. And again, they attested that we certified the list of all these votes are contained herein. So then 10 days later, this circuit court judge, a guy named Jameson, said that Kennedy had won the election. He stressed the importance of the Democrat electors having met on December 19th, as the Electoral Count Act describes, to cast their ballots in favor of Kennedy. That step allowed the Hawaii governor to then certify Kennedy as the winner of Hawaii's electoral vote, to count Hawaii's votes in favor of Kennedy, overturning the original result. And that's exactly what Donald Trump was trying to do in Georgia. Nobody tried to kill them, but Kennedy or anybody tried to steal the election. It was all legal and constitutional.
Yep. Yeah, and this is why ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is expensive. The fact that people don't know this, and, of course, the fact we have a media that fails to report it. I see New Orleans is out there in the chat. He's chiming in from time to time saying the main reason why there is an electoral college system was to prevent everyday whites from having to say so. The elite whites don't trust them. Ill-informed masses. And I don't think that's what the initial intent of what the electoral college piece was with the electors.
I'll tell you one thing, Sally. You might really want to look into the Rutherford Hayes-Samuel Tilden election. That was a doozy. I mean, that one was off the chain. I'm serious. I mean, you think what happened in January 6th was what? What happened in 1876, which led to the Electoral Count Act of 1877, was truly off the chain, off the charts, crazy. And a lot of people don't have no idea about it or whatever.
Yeah. Like I said, I was about to ask you when that happened.
1876. And we had legislation, we had Supreme Court president and legislation come about it as a direct result of it.
Yep. And this,
I mean, they literally, Congress, after the objections were held, they literally held a backroom deal to resolve the votes, and the Democrats agreed to yield some electoral votes to Rutherford B. Hayes if they would withdraw Union troops from the South during Reconstruction. And that gave a one-vote victory to Rutherford B. Hayes.
Until you had described the process of the objections just now, I never even heard of that particular process. I heard of objections, but the process itself, even from the right media, even from Alex Jones, Stu Peters, et cetera, I never heard of that. Maybe they don't know about it as well.
Joe, one elector in that dispute was replaced after they declared him being illegal for having been an elected or appointed official. And you know, who should have, remember, he won by one electoral vote. And the question of who should have been awarded these votes is what the controversy was all about. I mean, it was wild.
Okay.
So you're talking about 1876? Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry, Sally. Go ahead.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Yeah, 1876.
Yeah,
you really ought to do some in-depth research on it.
Some history on
okay.
that one. Because I'll admit I'm ignorant of that one, the 1876 election. I definitely did look at that. Cindy, are you there now? I think Cindy is here.
Yeah, well, I've been on and off because I was talking to Rubio's person. So
okay,
go
ahead.
Anyway, so I've been on and off, so I'm kind of halfway. I'm just listening now. I can listen all the way. I got interrupted twice, and I wanted to hear what I was going to hear, you know?
Understand.
All I can tell you is this is my honest opinion. I had somebody tell me today that the Constitution is old, and it doesn't matter anymore because this is a new world era, and he's maybe 26, 27. Okay? So I just think that, you know, this is a fight, you know. I don't know if you heard what DeSantis said today. He said that he would support more Supreme Court justices that were more conservative than what Trump appointed, meaning people like Clarence Thomas. Okay, that's a good thing, all right? But look at where we are with the Supreme Court anyway. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you about it. I feel kind of bad about it. I lived in New Jersey. I grew up all around New Jersey. My father was a historian, graduated summa cum laude from Seton Hall. So I know all the history, and I get it. And actually, I really like to listen to Mike Church, if you know who he is. He used to be the early guy at 6 o'clock in the morning on Sirius. He's a really good constitutionalist, and I learned a lot from him. He has his own radio show now called Crusade Channel from Louisiana. So I don't think people really understand it because we're violating it all the time, and nobody seems to care. I just feel disheartened about it, and maybe it'll change if the election changes and Trump says, what did he say? He wants to bring back patriotism. And have state fairs where it's all American and, you know, people. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day, Sally. We used to have a guy that used to dress up like Thomas Paine. He lived on the west coast of Florida. And anytime anybody had a meeting or we had an event, he would show up. We had other people like him. I don't know what happened to them. I don't see anybody come to any meetings talking about the Constitution. Even when you go down to the Trump 47 Club or you go here, you go there. Nobody's really talking about it. We need to bring those people back. We need to have people coming to these meetings and Trump events and this event and that event, and they need to talk about it. I used to get constitutions from Tea Party patriots. I used to get literally cases of them. And then I would go and give them out at the school or go to the fair and give them out. We did a lot of that. But I don't think anybody's doing that today.
How are they going to do it when you have a 26-year-old who probably graduated from college about 5 years previously, who's been indoctrinated with the Marxist type of indoctrination, and the influence of course, the boiling frog and the incrementalism, and the academics who just turned over their credentials over to Marxism, and so that's why. People do know. They're not taught, and they don't care.
But we have to remember, I like to take Ron Paul's approach. Okay, he said this one time, and I've heard other people, homeschoolers are going to save the country. And you think about it now. I tell people all the time, you know, good for moms of liberty or whatever they are. I think that's all good. I think people are, going against the school board and all that. But we live in a country where people are really spoiled, and we don't live in a country where women stay home with their children because they've done that financially. They've ruined the homemaker. Somebody has to be home with the kids. So if you're home with the kids, why not homeschool them? I mean, Representative Brian Mass, his wife homeschools their three boys. He wouldn't dare put them in public school. He already put them in private school. So
we have to shut down the public schools.
Right, and that's probably not going to happen because the Department of Ed, listen, this is the only way it's going to happen. If Trump goes in, like he was told the first time, and I always tell this story, on Sirius Radio, when Bannon took over that radio station, which was Breitbart Radio, it was on at 9 o'clock in the morning. Let me think. Yeah, 9 o'clock in the morning. I can't remember. There was a guy that used to come on before that. It would be on Sundays and Saturdays. Gary Bauer, you remember Gary Bauer? He ran for president one time. He was a Christian pastor. And another guy from the Jerusalem Post. And they were talking one day, Trump had already won the primary, and they were talking about how he had Newt Gingrich and a couple other people put him on a commission, and they were out trying to figure out how they could get rid of the Department of Education, all these different departments, what they could do to get rid of them. They went back to Trump. Now, this was on the radio. The one guy comes in, he comes in half, like 15 minutes late, and he says, oh, you're not supposed to tell people that. Like, nobody was supposed to know that Trump had this commission going out on how to take these agencies out. Well, lo and behold, what happened? He got in and he took out that one agency, and I don't remember what it was. Maybe Karen does. I want to say something to do with the forestry or something like that. And he moved it because Newt Gingrich and them said the only way that you can get rid of these federal agencies is to move them out of Washington. So by moving them out of Washington and moving them to, like, you know, some, you know, crappy place to live, you know, just by then we would limit the amount of people that wanted to do that, and then you could really work on getting rid of it. So he had a plan. I think if he does that again, I think this time with the right people around him, we could possibly do that, because I've heard senators, and I asked Brian Mass, I said, would you be opposed to taking out the Department of Education? No, I would absolutely do it. I think there are plenty of us up there on the Hill that would do that, and I think that's what has to happen. Then it goes to the states, and that's when, you know, the people that are in control up in Tallahassee, I mean, they're the ones, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, we're going to get woke out of the schools. We're not getting all woke out of the schools. I can tell you that right now because I see it.
No, never. That's why I got to shut them down. Yep.
Right. Yep. So I think that's a good idea. I think Alex Newman's approach is exit public schools. Now you have the Hope Scholarship, which Karen probably talked about, which they can do if you want to homeschool your children. That's what I think you ought to do, but I also think it should be brought up. I don't know why at all these holidays that we have, the 4th of July, all of that, we all should be out there giving out constitutions, and they should have people talking about it. But they don't, because now it's just like a party. Hey. And we'll all get drunk, and we'll get on our boat, and that's it. And nobody even thinks about it. That's why free speech is so important, because that's going to happen.
Wow. Yeah,
okay?
Cindy.
If you go on Twitter. Pardon?
Yeah. Yeah, Cindy, let me mention something. I got to call this out, two things. I've talked about this the last couple of years, and it is not, we are not celebrating July 4th. We are celebrating Independence Day. Part of the brainwashing was to take the word Independence Day out of it. So I've been really pushing. People say Happy Independence Day, not July 4th. We're not celebrating a calendar day. We're celebrating the independence. And the other part of that is that people have to really know what it means, but we've got to shut down the schools. The schools, to me, has to be at the local level. I don't see it ever happening in D.C. because you have the people at the state level who are getting money from the federal level, this other thing. What do we do to get a massive campaign here in Florida at the local level to homeschool your kids, get your school, get the kids out of the schools?
Well, it's happening, Sal. I mean, we have a couple of co-ops here where they found churches and they're homeschooling. But and we also have, you know, that Hillsdale school, the charter school, which is not, they have a lot of problems too. So I don't know what the answer is there, but I can tell you that with free speech today, Elon Musk put on Twitter, are you ready? You sitting down? That George Soros' son is very concerned, like him, about free speech. He is a free speech warrior. So George Soros' son.
I like that.
Elon Musk put it out. Elon said that that's not true. That George Soros' son, who now has taken over, and he is for for free speech.
Yeah.
Okay, but I will tell you, I was taken off of Twitter. I'm not taken off of Twitter, and I don't hold back. I don't care. I put it all on there. And what Tucker did last Tuesday by saying Obama was gay, you think? And did anybody look into it? Did anybody investigate him? No. So then he lit up the White House with the rainbow, the picture of the rainbow. And then what happened? Now I'm going to tell you step three. Step three is going to be, what about Obama? What about Michelle? Tomorrow, Tucker's going to be on tomorrow on Twitter.
Okay.
I don't know what time, but he's on Twitter. Yep, live.
Okay.
I want to get back
to the electors, but that will definitely carry that conversation on as well. Especially the July should be the month of the independent patriots, so independence, whatever, something like that. If we can have a whole month to celebrate transgender, pervertedness, and gayety, and whatever else, then we ought to be able to celebrate independence and freedom, right? I would think. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to come up with. What July is supposed to be, Independence Month, Independence Patriots.
If people know what it is, have you seen the Man in the Street interviews where they've asked natural born citizens what was Independence Day, what was July 4th and Independence Day about, and what was the Civil War about?
But
and
I'm
they
not
don't
surprised.
Know.
There isn't. You go out shopping, it says Happy July 4th. It doesn't say Independence Day. Anyway, hold on one second, Joe. I know you've been out there waiting, so let me have Joe get a word in here.
Oh, I'm just listening. I'm just listening to the chat. That's all. I figured I'd have pressed one to jump in here, but I didn't know what the topic really was. So, what's the main topic of tonight's podcast, or do you have one?
Oh, well, the electors. What is an elector? Who truly elects the president? How are these electors selected? Total party control over our elections.
Well,
if you're in no party choice,
elector,
you don't really get the vote.
Well, the Electoral College is a good idea, because if the majority always rules, if the more popular vote always wins, then the minority will never – we can't be a republic. The minority can never elect the president then. So we have to have the Electoral College, because the minority then gets the vote. That's what the Electoral College is about.
Oh, can I just break in here 1 minute? I just want to break in 1 minute. I just want to tell you that our president, the illegitimate president, gave a speech today in front of the Pride flag today. Because now that's a national holiday. That's going to be our next national holiday. And this woman, she posed topless with him in front of the White House.
thank goodness I didn't see that. The other thing real quick is that I saw some clip of him speaking to some group, and it was obviously the trans whatever groups out there, and he was saying that they were the most courageous. And I'm like thinking, and it's like, okay, a week before you were in front of the military people, the troops, and you're telling the troops that these gay people are homosexuals, transgenders, whatever else they are, binaries. And you're saying these are the most courageous. You just really slapped the face of your military that you just spoke to where you fell.
They don't care. Nobody cares. You know what I mean? I mean, he said so much already. He's been in the office for 50 years saying the same crap, you know? So, I mean, it's the American people just. You know, thank you, sir. Give me some more. Thank you, sir. Give me some more. You know, that video that goes around. It's like the American people just want more, you know? I mean, I saw Donald Trump over the weekend, and I yelled to him, you know, about the Republic, you know, and he said flat, he looked at me, he says, I'm waiting on the people, you know, and he's right. He's right. He said it in the beginning when he was younger, waiting on the people. You know, he gave the Republic to us. We sat around, did nothing, and we still do nothing. We need to rise up and start doing what we're supposed to be doing, what we're supposed to do in a republic, and hold these people accountable for their actions, and recall them if necessary.
We can't get
by the way, I've got a little announcement. I got a little announcement for those of you who may have wanted to have gone to my show on Wednesday. Don't. It's not, I terminated the show. Okay.
Oh,
the show
really?
Not exist.
You didn't last long like a pilot. You didn't last long enough as a pilot.
Yeah, just about. Quick. I only wanted it for a limited. It was a limited series, put it like that, in Hollywood terms, TV terms.
Well, yeah, okay. Maybe even you have some candidates to vet out there. You can get back on.
What are you
going to
do with your free time now, Joe?
I've got plans. I've been making good use of my free time before I started the show. I came to do what I came to do, and now it's over and done with.
Gotcha.
Okay. Now, surprisingly, I have to comment on this. Nathan has not chimed in yet. I am so surprised. This is his topic. Maybe he's happy that I'm actually saying almost everything the same as he has said. I don't know. So, Nathan, if you're out there, I do see that we have Brother Warren who wants to chime in. And just a reminder of what I said in the beginning of the show, I am not going to take anybody calling me a racist for some stupid reason because they, whatever, yeah. The nonsense that comes up. So, Brother Warren, New Orleans out there, you are on the show. Please keep on topic and don't try to be insulting, at least to me.
Yeah, nobody calls him a racist, you know.
Well, I want to say greetings to you, Sally, and all your listening audience. I am Brother Warren, the host of New Orleans Wake Up on the Blog Talk platform. I'm a few listens away from my 66,000 mark, and I should hit that 66,000 sometime this week, and I will do a celebratory show when I hit my 66,000. So people are listening to my show, and it's spreading like wildfire around the world, literally. I want to chime in on the topic of the electors. Now, I have a book here entitled We the Elites, Why the U.S. Constitution Serves the Few. The author is Robert Ovitz, who's a senior lecturer in political science at San Jose State University. And allow me to indulge you about the Electoral College he refers to here. I'm going to start right here. The veto was rarely used until President Andrew Jackson. Oh, I'm sorry, that was the wrong page. Okay. On September 4, 1787, during the final weeks of the convention, the Committee of 11 on Postponed Matters, which met in secret and included James Madison, John Dickinson, Roger Sherman, Governor Morris, the latter of whom appeared to have his hand in nearly every aspect of the final text, made one lasting change. The committee had electors selected by state legislators pick the president, an idea proposed by James Wilson and modeled after the German system of princely electors. Passed by a vote of 9 states to 2, the new process made the president elected by the eligible voters every 4 years in non-binding ritual crowning. The debate was focused on how the executive would be selected and how long they would serve, not whether or not to have one. The consensus was that a president was needed to constrain democracy because the people out of doors could not be trusted to govern themselves. Elbridge Gerry echoed many of the framers when he declared that, quote, the people are uninformed and would be misled by a few designing men, unquote. He opposed direct popular election as, quote, the worst of all the methods, unquote. Hamilton supported the Electoral College in Federalist Paper No. 68 because it protected the majority from harming themselves by voting incorrectly. Separating the popular vote from the actual selection was a, quote, effectual security against this mischief, unquote, so as to prevent tumult and disorder. Voting in separate states, quote, will expose them much less to heats and ferments, which might be communicated from them to the people, than if they were all to be convened at one time in one place, unquote. The electorate would also be divided into different groups and interests in order to create what Hamilton called obstacles and the way of the majority combining to elect a president who would serve their shared class interests. The Electoral College was a manifestation of the strategy of divide and conquer. So basically, if any of you guys snapped your fingers and went back in the past, these founding fathers would not have trusted any of you all to vote in a popular vote for the president. So the Electoral College was designed so the elites to crown who they wanted as the president. And so I wanted to introduce that concept of electors in a proper historical context.
That's
based on the documentation. You have read none of the Federalist
Papers,
sir.
No, that's opinion
based on
the documentation.
You're not qualified.
No,
you're not
no.
qualified to challenge the scholar. You ain't qualified.
Sure, I'm
you're
sure
coming
I'm,
with talking
sure
points.
Sure,
okay, New Orleans, okay, let us respond to what you just said. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, that's an opinionated article written that he's saying from one of his fans that he likes to quote from that don't like the republic of this country. They support a Marxist communist regime, and they don't like anything that has to do with a republic or a democratic form of government. And that's what that author is, okay? Of course, I can quote Federalist Papers and twist the wording around and make it sound like, and formulate it to my opinion and write a paper about it and then have someone publish it for me and say it's a fact, but it's not a fact. That's not what the founders intended when they started the Electoral College.
Have you read the words of the founders, sir? Have you read all of the Federalist Papers and what they said? Have you read Hamilton?
I have not read every single one of them. No,
okay,
I have not.
Okay, well, you're not qualified to have this discussion then.
Okay. Why not?
You're speaking from misinformation.
Answer my question. Have you ever run for public office?
Yeah, that's irrelevant to the topic.
It has everything to do with it. Have you ever run for public office?
It has nothing to do with the discussion of electoral college in a historical context.
It has to do with elections. Yes, it does. Have you ever ran for any type of election or been involved in any election?
It is irrelevant to the discussion of electoral college,
well, you're not gonna answer, you're never
and the development of it, and the development of it by the founding fathers, and the fact that they did not trust the masses of the people to vote and pick
what founding father
a leader.
Said that? What founding father
okay.
said that?
None.
He never answers any questions. None, exactly.
No,
because I don't argue with there's a saying, don't argue with a donkey.
Now I'm a donkey.
Suffer once says, don't confuse me with the facts. You don't want to be confused with the facts is what the problem is here. And you hate America. I mean, time and time again, every week that you're on, I'm yet to be
Sally, this is your response. Sally, this is your response to the information I bring. You just accuse me of hating America. I'm bringing you information. I'm bringing you documentation. I'm bringing you scholarship. And this is the response to that, Sally? Come on, you can do better than that.
Yes.
Who wrote the paper, Warren? Who wrote the paper?
Okay, Karen. Okay, hold on, New Orleans. Karen.
There are plenty to quote on the other side. Hamilton was not for the Republic the way the Republic was. He had his own ideas. One, we have a Federalist, and we have an Anti-Federalist. They were the same
exactly.
arguments we're having now. So you have chosen, and you have every right to do that, a professor from a liberal state, from a liberal college. I wonder whether or not he would be.
At least, ma'am, at least,
I did not interrupt you.
You interrupted me now.
You didn't interrupt me. No, I am still talking. And this is the problem.
Karen, I had to mute Brother Warren because he wouldn't let you finish. I'll unmute you in a few minutes. You do this every time. We want to have a discussion on this. So, Karen, go ahead and finish what you were saying. And this is the history. This is the history that you don't want to talk about, Brother Warren. There's a lot of stuff out there. And the Federalist Papers, I haven't read all of them. I've read a lot of them. So, please, again, don't. You talk down to everybody like you're the master of all the knowledge, and yet time and time again, you seem to be very much against the free will of the people, and there was a reason for an electoral college. Go ahead, Karen.
I was just going to say we have to understand, which we don't, the history of what was going on at that time. We didn't have 50 states with lots of technology and instantaneous messaging and talking. It took them days, months, weeks to get out a message, and they tried to make it as easy as possible, but they also realized, and there are both two sides to, what do they say? There's two sides, three sides to everything, side the left side and the truth. This is our problem. We have to be able to sit down and have a conversation about what's going on. Yes, this was an opinion of Hamilton. He didn't trust the people. Washington didn't feel like that. So we have different opinions going on at the same time, just like we have now. And some of them even dueled it out and killed each other, just like we do now. So nothing really changed.
And the founders did not want the chief executive
to be elected by a purely democratic process. They feared that, and they said why they feared it. They feared it because they thought it would be yielding it to purely the emotions of a mob, potentially.
Exactly. Yep. And he was absolutely in favor of having a representative so that the process would be a democratic process whereby the representative is supposed to represent the will of his constituents, not the will of his donors. And I truly believe if we wanted to fix elections, we need to take the money out of it. Every
yes.
candidate can go online, put up a website and say, here I am, and do podcasts. We don't need to spend billions of dollars on marketing and stupidity when we should be telling the truth and laying out a plan of how to win, which we never do. And that's the problem. As long as they keep us so that we can't talk to each other, they will win. We have to talk to each other, and we have to say what is the most important thing that we can do right now. And the most important thing that we can do right now is win. And if we don't win, we will lose our country for hundreds of years, and our children will be slaves of a Marxist regime. And many of them will be separated just because of our opinions. So we have to say, wait a minute, what fight should we be fighting? A fight about an electoral college that everybody knows, if we did not have one, we would be ruled and look like California and New York. And that's what America would be. And we, the people, are saying we don't want that.
Sounds like someone's shuffling some papers. I'm not sure who it is, but if you're
yeah.
messing with some stuff, we can all hear it. And yeah, I do it all. I do it sometimes too. I finally got to the habit of not doing that too much because you don't when you don't hear it, everybody else does, kind of thing. You don't pay attention.
Oh yeah,
but,
terrible.
Yeah. Okay, and as I also said at the beginning of the show, that this was going to be a short show. I wasn't going to be able to run over tonight. I'm going to have to wrap it up here at 9 o'clock. And Brother Warren, I'll give you one last couple of minutes here, but don't get carried away and, you know, let's have a civilized discussion, please. And you got 2 minutes, and I'm going to give everybody else a chance to say their final
words of wisdom. I thought I was having a civilized discussion when I was bringing in scholarship, but apparently people don't appreciate that. But let me continue with this part about the electoral. Let me finish this part of the electoral college from this same section in this book called We the Elites. 20 presidential elections have delivered a president who either did not win a majority of the popular vote, won with only a plurality, that is the most votes, had the recount stopped by the Supreme Court, or were picked by the House of Representatives. It was apparent almost immediately that the Electoral College serves to constrain majority will. After the 1800 election did not deliver a winner in Electoral College and 36 inconclusive votes in the House, Jefferson was elected president along with Aaron Burr as vice president. They did not get along. The situation was so tense that Madison feared the military would be called out to put down a popular revolt if Jefferson was blocked. The 12th Amendment was supposed to fix the Electoral College so that voters would cast a single vote for both the president and vice president. Instead, the Electoral College has continued to deliver presidents who didn't win the popular vote. Today, the USA is one of the few representative democracies with a separately elected president who is not elected directly by the voters. Sarge actually said what I read before, and that is that the founding fathers did not trust the masses of the people to pick a leader, which means any of you guys snapped your finger and went back in time, you would be despised by the founding fathers. And me and Sarge wouldn't even envision to be able to vote at all.
No.
Okay. Now, thank you for that. And now, like I say, we're going to go around the table here. And then, like I say, I got to wrap it up here at 9 o'clock. Okay. Well, thank you for that info, Brother Warren. Sarge, you want to respond back?
Yeah, I'm glad to see that we agree upon the intent of the framers of the Constitution. There's no doubt that's exactly what they believed. As I said, our Constitution is replete with examples of representative government and democratic government. These are elements of both. And that's the whole beauty of the scheme. It's not all of one thing or the other. Certain things, such as the Bill of Rights, are not subject to the whims of a majority. Like most people being confronted with a child rapist would eschew that person the right to due process and a fair trial. They would simply take him up, string him up by the tree, and lynch him. And I thought Brother Warren was against lynching. By the way, so am I. I think that even a child rapist, as despicable as they are entitled to due process, and certain things should be above and beyond the will of the majority. As I said, I am certain if you put child rapists' rights up to a majority vote, they would lose and they'd get lynched. So, again, when you look at the beauty of the Constitution, its beauty is exactly that reason, that it incorporates all of this into a magnificent whole. Imperfect, yes, but better than every other single system in its aggregate, which led to the greatest country in the history of mankind. As far as I'm concerned, that is proof positive of its efficacy.
Thank you so much. And Joe, any final words for you for the wisdom of the night? Final words.
All right. Well, to echo Sarge's words, that's correct. This is the greatest country that has been formulated and the form of government. The Constitution is the second greatest document other than the Bible. That we can comply and live by and live peacefully by. If we follow it to the detail of the words that it is, we can live in peace and harmony together, and everyone can have their life and generate pursuit of happiness without any problems. But corruption falls in, and egos fall into place, and that would happen even during the founders' time, and quite self-evident, where we have war, for goodness sake. And so this is what happens. And just like the female said earlier, we see these problems happening today. But we're trying to avoid bloodshed because we're more sophisticated today and a more civilized society. We have more tools at hand. We can talk to each other more rapidly. We don't have to send letters on Pony Express. It doesn't take weeks to talk to somebody. So we can talk to people, you know, rather quickly and try to get our points across. But we still have that stubbornness and that egotistical mindset of man. For why? I don't know. Is it evil? I don't know. But whatever it is, it's got to go, and it's got to stop because it's destroying the moral fabric and foundations of what this country was built upon, and we've got to stop it somehow, some way. I yield.
Thank you so much, and, of course, you also have your show on Tuesday, which I listen to most of the time. I don't get to listen every week, but I do listen to it most of the time. Thank you so much. Karen, go ahead and let everybody know about your show as well and your final words.
Yes, thank you, and thank everybody. Wonderful conversation. Karen, my show is on Saturday and Sunday at 7 in the morning, and this is Eastern, and 9 in the evening. And I do an interview of a topic and expound upon that topic and have guests like Sally was mentioning, Alex Newman. We go and have an in-depth conversation about homeschooling and what you can do and how you can do it. So, yes. In answer to Brother Warren, thank heaven, thank our founding fathers, thank everyone they gave us the Electoral College. Otherwise, America would look like California. And I asked somebody today who was on my show, he lives out in California, and I said, tell me, are the pictures, are they real about San Francisco? Is it really like that? And he said, the pictures don't do it justice. It's worse. So if that's what we wanted our country to look like, then we would be ruled by the majority rules because more people had gravitated to California and New York. And that's how we would be ruled. So the Electoral College evens the score, so to speak, because we, the smaller states, get to group together with other smaller states, and together we would be able to choose our president. And they didn't want a majority rules because they knew what a majority rules was. Well, they ran away from that, from the countries that they came. They knew what it was like to be under the rule of a dictator or a king. They didn't want that. And they also knew how easily the populace could be fooled and fooled into voting the wrong way, especially if they were uneducated, which is why they place such an emphasis on education. And most people don't know that America's children up until the mid-1800s were far superior and advanced in reading and math than any other. And then evil took over, and that's another story. But if you want to stop this, we have to change the school. That's the whole key, is the school, because it has to be taught in a way that they will understand history. And right now we are allowing history to be erased. And we have to stop that. We have to say, no, you can't take down another statue.
Yeah.
Or give the group that took down the statue, give them a bill. Do something. But the incompetence or the representatives that we have chosen for the wrong reason. We chose them because they looked nice, they sounded good, they had a really nice campaign, and they said they would take care of you, and they got elected, and all you had to do was have a gathering or a get-together or whatever. And then they get there and they lie, because that was never their goal, to win. And we have to start playing to win. We don't play to win. We play to win and do win more states than the others, than New York and California. But we don't come together. We're very busy. Everybody has a group. Everybody has an everything. And we need to come together and say, what's important? America, what are we going to do? Get Donald Trump elected. Nothing else is important. Expose the FBI and the CIA and let the people start seeing the drips of what is really going on. And put those, by supporting good media, that's not ABC, NBC, or CBS and Fox. I think it's so exciting to see Tucker smashing Fox. That's great. Kind of like David and Goliath, when you think of it.
Yep. Yep. That's the truth of it.
Long way to go. We have a long way to go. But this didn't happen overnight, so we can't think we can fix it overnight. And that's why we take little bites and we do things in our local communities. And we get our kids in school to learn to read. And that's, we have to stop speaking to the choir, so to speak, and branch out and speak to others that we wouldn't normally talk to. Like you, speaking to someone in the supermarket. There's nothing wrong with starting with, you know, look at the price of this. Oh, my gosh, blah, blah, blah. Then you start a conversation because you're starting on common ground and let them talk more than you.
Well, I'll tell you, we definitely have a long way to go. The sad part is we really only have until 2024. And I don't know if we can undo all the decades and decades of damage without it being something more massive. It was Jefferson, I think, who said, excuse me, that you have to have a revolution every generation or every 30 years to keep government under control. Yeah. We have totally out of control government. It's totally, and there definitely is a conflict, as I was going through it tonight, the role of the electors and the role of the citizen to vote. The citizens have the right to vote in every primary, so closed primaries are totally unconstitutional. And in that 24th Amendment, it says we have the right to vote on the electors. That's what it says. I read it over and over again. And then the other part is to say that the states go out there and appoint in such a manner that they appoint those electors. There's definitely a conflict there. And I totally, I mean,
that doesn't
I'm not
going
to go register as a Republican because that's the only way I get to vote. It means I won't get to participate in the presidential election. I'm a no-party affiliate. I'm not going to be part of the slime of the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. They're both evil. They're both part of the problem. And if we're going to keep trying to support the problem, in the hopes of, personally, I think hell will freeze over before you clean up either one of these parties. I don't think you can fix them. I really don't. And so this is what we have to look forward to. And it's only through the ability that Trump may be able to start pushing something about the NPAs, of course, with all the games they're playing with him. It's all discussed where they're trying to take him down. Because they know he's pushing back against everything that they're doing. He's much more of a nationalist, America first person. They don't want America first. They don't believe in America. No. The vast majority, we've allowed them to take over. And it's a disgusting fight. That's a disgusting reality. And just like Elon Musk and Soros, I mean, come on. And people are thinking that Elon Musk is going to be this hero to us. And to a certain degree, he's you know, him helping to clean up some of the Twitter problem, but he's still neck and neck and working with the CCP. So just think what you're putting out there on Twitter is all going to the CCP for their own data mining and whatever else they may be doing. And Elon is still his loyalty is torn. I've liked a lot. Obviously, what he did with Twitter was a heck of a lot better than what it was. But you better beware. There's so much more here to deal with, and I just don't know if the current election, if the election process is going to fix it. And, you know, Karen, I'm not going to read off any of this nonsense, except to say that Brother Warren thinks everybody besides him is dumb and doesn't know anything. So this is probably the reason why I tried to have a conversation with everybody's dumb but him. Some of the most dumb, uninformed people. This is him. Like he's the master of all knowledge.
Which, he's a genius. He's a legend in his own mind.
He's a legend in his own mind. And Nathan, if you're out there listening, I'm really disappointed. You were supposed to call in and chime in on the subject tonight. He didn't do that. I thought sure he was going to be first in line on this one. But anyway, we definitely have to clean up this election process. And we've got to do something about these political parties. I'm sorry, they're part of the problem. And you know what? Can we fix it by 2024? I doubt it. So I just don't know how much.
Well, you got the Constitution Party out there, you know, that's getting ballot access across the country. So you got the Constitution Party out there.
Well, they played all sorts of games with them. I actually voted for a Constitution Party candidate one other time. Not this past, but not the past election, but I have voted. And in the past, the two parties, because of the state control of the political parties, they go out there and say, well, wait a minute. Initially you had to have like 10% of the vote to participate in the debate. Well, the person now has 12% of the vote. Nope, now you're not going to be allowed to vote. Now you have to have 15%. The two parties and in the Florida Constitution, or they are on the State Department website, it says the two primary parties, the other parties. So it's not the role of the state to say who the two primary parties are. They're supposed to be the political parties, and they should all be equal. But the state has already chosen sides, too. So it's all part of the garbage. And we get the representation we deserve. This is the garbage we get because the election process has been corrupted by those involved. We should have been, as Sarge said, Jan 6th. Trump had no reason to cause an insurrection. It was the other side that had the reason to cause an insurrection because they wanted to stop that pausing of the vote and actually going back and cleaning up what happened. It makes perfect sense. And that's what this is all about. Who owns the ballot box? Right now it doesn't look like it's we the people. So how are we the people going to take back this country with this garbage going on? But anyway, with that being said,
Can I say one more thing, Sally?
Sure, real quick.
I am infinitely less concerned about whether or not we continue to have an electoral system. In fact, I want it to continue, than I am about the apparent lack of election integrity in 5 or 6 key swing electoral states. That infinitely and vastly concerns me far more. I want to make sure that the constitutional process of appointing electors is done in accordance with Article 2 of the Constitution. I want to make sure that it's done with integrity, that there is oversight, that there is chain of custody, that there is every single law that ensures the integrity of the election. That is infinitely more important to me, and that thing must be corrected before the election of 2024. If it is not, then democracy itself, as some people here are saying, which seems to be so important to them, will never prevail.
Amen to that. I totally agree. And that's if the process is working the way it's intended to work. And then the other part, again, there is somewhat of a contradiction there between who votes on those, who selects those electors, and the role of the citizen, the voter, in that process, in that primary of selecting the electors. That is the part that I got the question, and I find it despicable that I'm being forced to be part of a political party to participate in my own government and my own elections. I don't think that's right. The Electoral College, the electors part, I don't have a problem with. It's the way we're selecting those electors that I have the problem with. And when that part is corrupt, then, I mean, it's just spreads. It just goes wild after that. The corruption is like a cancer across the system, the corruption of the election. So I totally agree with that. And with that being said, thank you so much for this excellent discussion. We need to continue it. We do need – I said there's two things that have to be done for us to save this country, save our republic. One, totally shut down public education, including the colleges. They're nothing but indoctrination camps. They've dumbed down Americans beyond belief. It's the wrong thing. And then we also have to have election integrity and honest elections. If we don't have those two things, the rest of it doesn't matter. We can't take back a country if we're an ignorant people. We don't know what's going on. We don't understand our history. We can't take it back. And we'll never take it back if the elections are so corrupted that they're totally controlled by a few true elites out there who have taken over the ballot box kind of thing, which is what happened in 2020 and what's happened in 2022 as well. And it's going to happen again in 2024 if we don't figure a way to do it. And we've got to do it locally. We've got to demand paper ballots and things like that and an honest count at the local level. And with that being said, once again, thank you for an excellent discussion. Please tune in next week. We're going to be talking about Florida bills, and you're going to get a little bit of a sense of what Ron DeSantis really stands for. And we can maybe discuss a little bit more Florida election laws, as I started to do that a little bit tonight and just ran out of time on that one and that type of thing. But please be engaged, be informed. Please say a prayer for our country. If we don't get God back in there, I know some people don't believe in God, but without God, I don't think we have a chance. God definitely gives us a sense of direction as to who we are as a people, what we truly stand for. And I think you see that by the culture, what we have done to this culture by rejecting God out of our process. So, again, thank you, everybody. Good night, and God bless America.